Welcome to Unyielded, thriving no matter what. In a world of constant change and challenges, it can seem hard to keep up, no matter how hard we run. Yet we all know those people who seem to handle everything with grace and grit. Seemingly, nothing throws them off their game. They are engaged in what matters most to them, they are achieving the success they desire. In other words, they are creating the life they love to live, no matter what challenges and surprises show up. We call them Unyielded. My name is Bobby Kaler, and I'm your host, and I'm so excited to be on this journey with you. I mentioned that it's a journey, and you might find yourself anywhere along that path. You may be starting out, you may be mid-career, or considering your next career. You could be an entrepreneur, a salesperson, or you may be that person who just feels like something else is calling to you, and it's time for a change. My mission is to provide stories that inspire us, so that when a surprise shows up and threatens to derail us, we will choose to persist. I will also provide practical skills, perspectives, and ideas that will help us create the habits of thriving and flourishing. Because at the end of the day, it is all about providing hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all be more fulfilled and successful if we choose. Let's get right to today's episode. My guest today is a co-host of the Life Design Podcast, a coach, and a full-time RVer. I think that you're going to love her adventurous and authentic style. Her name is Suzanne Justice Hidalgo, and I cannot wait for you to hear her story. Suzanne, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
I have been looking forward to this because I loved our conversation before. And I know you're one of those people that you've been through a pretty big reinvention in your life. And I thought maybe we could explore that a little bit. And like, starting with, how did you know it was time for a reinvention?
That is a complicated question. But and I look at it more as it was a process, like a long fuse that led to a bomb that went off in my life. And so I think some of the things that happened during that process sort of prepared me for the big reinvention. But my husband and I had been married for 2 decades. We had 4 children together. I'd stayed home with our kids for 12 years. And then I was a teacher and a school secretary. And I can't say that I was unhappy. I wasn't unhappy, but I wasn't happy either. And I'm not really sure I would even have known how to define that. And I was very busy. My husband traveled a lot for work and again, had these 4 kids in 6 and under. And so I know I distracted my own thoughts and self with being really busy. And I kind of looked around me and I was like, you know, I don't really have a reason to be discontent. There are so many people worse off than I am. And we were in a military town for 10 years and goodness gracious, those husbands were gone for years at a time. And these moms had to be full-time parents. So I'm a content person all around anyway, and try to make the best of a situation. And I really very much go with the flow. So I was just going with the flow on this marriage. And then things were getting really, really rocky, but he was never home enough for us to even deal with it. Oh. And so, but there was this one point, we had one of our reoccurring arguments and he dropped the word divorce for the first time.
Wow.
And I was completely dumbstruck. We'd never even talked about that. I didn't even know that was a possibility. And I remember, I mean, when I say dumbstruck, I was literally speechless. I said nothing. I just clammed up and I don't even know how long it was before I spoke again. And then I think that was my first wake-up call of having to acknowledge what I didn't want to acknowledge, that this relationship was not a relationship. And I remember reading a quote that had said, every relationship is a negotiation, but when you negotiate yourself, it's a prison. And I'm like, I've been living in prison. I have been allowed myself to just be distracted and focused on being a good mom and being a good employee. And I have tried, I felt like I had tried in my marriage. And I was, you know, doing all the right things, serving even when someone's not being nice to you, and nothing seemed to be working. And I can honestly say, like, I always had this feeling like something just wasn't quite right with him. And when I would press him on it, he'd get angry and blame other people or blame the situation or blame his past, or, and we just never really connected on a really deep soul level. And I just continued to ignore it. So when he dropped that word on me, I started really thinking about, like, immediately I go into sort of task mode of, okay, he's planning to divorce me. Right now I'm a school secretary. I make very little money, 4 kids. Like, how am I going to do this? But in all of that, I realized, why are you so okay with this? Like, I was genuinely, I never had thought about divorcing in any way, shape, or form ever. But I just realized, I remember talking to a friend and she was asking me about it. And I said, I'm not interested in being in a relationship where I don't feel loved and valued.
That's right.
As a human being anymore. I'm done. And I don't need to stay in this. And it just kind of really opened my eyes to a lot of things. But even then, I couldn't really make a move. I tend to be a little bit of a fence sitter as well. Like, I won't just sit on the fence and not make a decision. And that's a great and comfortable place for me to be.
Yeah.
And I love my sweet husband. He is a charmer and he's really, really good with words. And when I would be like, yeah, I think I'm okay with this, it was, no, I don't really want to get a divorce. And he'd say all the right things and make all the right promises. And I would get kind of sucked back into it again. And we would go to marriage counseling and I would get sucked back into this again. Like, okay, maybe we can work things out. I really want to work things out. We have children together. And he'd make all these promises, never follow through on any of them, which was a bright red flag I ignored.
That's right.
I was very, very good at believing the words and not looking for the behavior and the actions.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I talk about living on the promise of someday. He was always promising me, like, someday, or when something happened with the business or this happened, then I'm like, what? Then you'll spend time with me? Like, what, you know? And so, but I just bought into it every single time. So even when I realized, okay, I don't want to be living like this anymore, I still was stuck and couldn't really make a decision. And again, at that time, you know, I didn't understand. I don't even know if I knew the word gaslighting. I believe it was an old black and white movie.
Oh yeah. It was
really
a great movie.
It was. Yeah. And I didn't understand narcissism and I didn't, you know, again, I really thought I was just playing the role of the good wife and that should be enough. Move on. Like, there are worse situations out there. So yeah, that's a very long answer to a short question.
That's okay.
I can still say more. Yeah.
Well, it was a big event, you know, and I think there are some things in there too, Suzanne, when you talked about, you know, like, I wasn't unhappy, but I wasn't necessarily happy. I mean, I think a lot of us have been there. And also when you said, you know, continued to ignore things.
I think
many of us can relate. And, you know, whether it's in a relationship or with a job, whatever that might be, right?
Right.
But we do those things. So it sounds like you kind of had a big event that set the alarms off. Like, okay, it's something has to change.
Yeah, because then a few months down the road after that, he was going on another trip. And I just said, babe, you've got to figure out a way to be home more. Like, this is not okay. We had a family issue going on that he needed to be home for. And it seems like he was always escaping big issues in our family. And I was shouldering the burden of everything. And I'm like, this is not okay anymore. Like, you have got to be home. You got to talk to your partners. You got to figure this out. And he looked at me and he said, I have 25 people depending on me. And I went, I'm so sorry. I thought that there were 5 people, our family, that you had long before those 25.
That's right.
And that's when I knew, I'm like, marriage is over. And that's when I started making plans to leave.
Wow.
And then again, still, I think that was probably late August. And I really, again, I think, you know, I was starting to be honest with myself, but I wasn't being honest with other people. I didn't ask anybody for help. I didn't share what was going on. I told you I had that one friend that I'd mentioned it to, but I think I felt embarrassed or felt like I would be judged. I don't know. I just was still hiding from everyone. And I would just say, I'm fine. I'm fine. Everything's fine. Everything's fine. And I was two completely different people. I was a completely different person in my role as a wife than any other role in my work as a mom, any of those things. In my role as a wife, I would just acquiesce. I would back down. I would go with the flow. I'd give in to whatever he wanted and just be like, fine, whatever. It doesn't even, like, it literally got to the point where I was like, I don't even care anymore. It's so, he was increasingly angry all the time. We're all walking around on eggshells. At that point, I was like, you know what? Be gone. Actually, the house is more peaceful when you're not at home. And whatever's going on with you, you need to go figure it out. But stop blaming me, because it doesn't have anything to do with me. Like, I was very clear about that somewhere in my own soul. Like, I know, as crazy as he tried to make me a lot of times, when I would go in, I would go into his office and be like, okay, I want to talk about this one thing that you did to me. I don't want to talk about anything else. If I've done something, we can talk about it another time. Like, I made it very clear. And every single time, I'd walk out of his office feeling like a piece of crap. And I'm like, how did you do that? Like, but it's that defend, deflect, spin, blame other people, typical, you know, abusive behavior. And so, yeah, that was, so then I did start sort of like putting some wheels in motion. And then October, our world just exploded, and his fake world of, you know, being a Mr. Big Hotshot CEO and all of this persona that he had built up out there in the world just completely came crumbling down around him. And I was the one buried underneath all the rubble. Wow. And so that threw me into just complete darkness. I mean, talk about not wanting to talk about things before. Now I really was like, everything. I mean, I'm questioning everything. I'm questioning God and my relationship with him and grace and, you know, this person that I thought I knew. I don't know him. I really felt like God had turned his back on me. And I was like, wait a minute, I did all the right things. I checked all the boxes. I followed all the rules. Like, I'm such a rule follower. I've done all the right things. How could you let this happen to me and my family? And so that's when I went to a really dark place. I mean, to me, I never, ever want anybody to feel lonely. I think loneliness is just the biggest killer out there. And you can be very lonely in your marriage. And I realized I had been very lonely in my marriage for a long time. And then I was just completely traumatized. Actually did get diagnosed with PTSD and went to serious therapy. But I was extremely lonely and still not able to talk to anyone, not even my closest friends. And that's when I started abusing alcohol, and I would drink just to sleep. I mean, it honestly started just to be able to sleep at night, because I was not sleeping at all. I'm still working. I'm still taking care of my kids. Yeah. And I was just an absolute zombie. And so, I mean, of course, you know, so I would drink too much at night to go to sleep. And obviously I'm not drinking during the day. I've got a job, but it was not, I was drinking for the wrong reasons. I was drinking to mask pain, which was the same thing that my husband had been doing. You know, he hadn't dealt with his own stuff and acted out on that. And I really was just doing the same thing. So we did. And we separated for a long time, because I just knew, I'm like, I can't live looking at you anymore. Like, we can't do this together. You have stuff you've got to go figure out once. And like, you've got to take care of yourself and figure out your stuff, because it is your stuff. It's not mine. And I need to figure out if I can stay married to you and find myself again. Like, I felt like I had kind of started doing that summer before. Like, I called it the summer of Suzanne, where I started speaking up for myself. And I spent way too much time waiting for him. Like, hey, we're going to go on this hike. And he'd be like, oh, but I really want to come, but I can't, da, da, da. And I wouldn't go. And I'm like, finally, summer of Suzanne, I'm like, screw that. I'm going. And I just started living and doing more. And it was fabulous. And so we both knew that there was no repairing our marriage at all. It was already demolished. So we were going to just level it and possibly have a second marriage, or we would divorce. And those were really our only two options. And I'll joke with him about my first husband sometimes, because he was kind of a jerk. We make it very clear to people, we are this is my second marriage. I've been married twice. I've just we're married to the same person.
Yeah.
And so we both did really have to do some serious, serious work individually before we could ever do any work together.
Wow. Because it should be noted, you guys are still married. How many years later?
Let's see. So that all happened in 2015. So it's 2021. We were separated. I think we still didn't separate until like early 2016.
Yeah.
Separated for a while. It was very, very rocky. It was very rocky and very hard. And, you know, once someone gets exposed for being a fraud, they kind of want everything to just be fixed immediately. And he'll be the first one to say that. He goes, and somebody told him, they're like, buddy, it took you years to get here. You're not going to get out of it in a day.
No,
you're just not. And that's just another unhealthy coping mechanism of just, you know, patching it all up and moving on.
Yeah.
And I had to discover some really hard things about myself. Like I said, I'm a very laid back person. I don't get mad very easily. My daughter-in-law jokes with me. She's like, I'm still waiting to see like spicy mom. Like I haven't seen her yet. I said, she's there. I don't get upset very often. But what I had come to realize is I'd actually been building up just brick after brick after brick of resentment towards him over the years for all the broken promises, all the some days, all the, you know, the way that he had treated me. And boy, did it come out sideways. And it was like anger overload. Sometimes it felt like I was watching myself from above of like, who is this person? I don't know angry Suzanne. It was probably good that it came out. Didn't always come out in the most healthy way. But that was a really, that was a hard realization to find out that, hey, Miss California chill girl isn't that chill. I was actually building up a lot of resentment towards him.
It happens over time like that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, there were things inherently I knew that he was not my responsibility. It's not my job to make someone else happy. I can't, you know, you can't meet expectations you don't even know someone has about you. I was very clear about that. Like, I remember one of the first counselors we went to, he goes, says, well, you know, this has nothing to do with you. And I'm like, yeah, I know that. Let's move on. You know,
obviously I got that part.
Like, I'm not responsible for the decisions that somebody else makes. So yeah, it was a lot of years of really hard work, but we do have a really great relationship now. It's that thing that I always knew was missing isn't missing anymore.
Wow. Yeah. And so Suzanne, when you said, you know, you had to take the time to find yourself again. I think that might resonate with a lot of people. Were there anything in particular that you did to find Suzanne?
I went to therapy. Mm-hmm. I went to several therapists, actually. I don't think you have to stay with the same person for a long time. I think sometimes people serve their purpose and then maybe you need a different voice. And actually I had graduated from therapy when I told you that first story, when he first told me that he was thinking about divorce. I immediately went to therapy, graduated, and then I called her back up and I went, well, I think I need to come back. So yeah, going to therapy was really the first step that I took. I realized that I had tied my identity, my value, and my self-worth to a person who, hey, you should never do that. But it was a person that abused that. And that's where I had to figure out my understanding of my creator as well. I think I had a very sort of skewed understanding of God and not to blame my upbringing. I actually had an excellent upbringing, but I definitely got some messages from the church as a young mom, not as a kid, as a young mom that I think had a little bit of a negative influence on me as far as the role of the wife, you know, the good godly wife. So I had to do some undoing on that end and figure out that I am valuable just by being me. Like I was already loved and worthy and valuable before I ever married, before I had kids. Being a wife and a mother does not bring me value. They add value to my life. And I certainly hope I add it to theirs, but I will never again tie my identity to another person. Mm-hmm. And I never intended to do that. You know, I was this go-getter 22-year-old girl. I was going to take over the world, be the next Katie Couric, and And then suddenly I'm like, I'm married and I've got kids, and very quickly and very much in succession. And I just lost myself. And it sounds more negative than it was, because at the time I was very happy with that. Having kids were a surprise to me. I didn't think I wanted them, and I had four, and I loved being a mom.
Yeah.
I absolutely loved it. It was one of probably the best surprise of my life was, and it's probably a good thing my first one was a surprise. I would have put off having kids forever. And so those 12 years I had with them were amazing. And then I went ahead and turned around to become an elementary school teacher, because I loved kids so much. I didn't like kids when I was young. So it wasn't all bad. I was just, again, putting my self-worth into things that I did or how I identified myself as a mom and a wife, and not just as myself, as Susan, like who I am with nothing else.
Yeah. I don't know if I shared this when we talked before, but I had a similar epiphany. It was after a breakup. This was many, many years ago. And I'd went on vacation. And so every morning I get up and I'd take these long walks, and I was just kind of thinking about stuff. And I was on this one walk and I had this epiphany. It was like, wow, when you see yourself through your eyes, like through my own eyes, I liked myself. Mm. And I realized I had given that power to other people, because it was always like, well, how does so-and-so perceive me? Or how do I look through their eyes? And I thought, I will never give away that kind of power again, because it's, you're kind of at their whim, you know what I mean? And it was like, no, I'll grade my own papers on this. I'm a good person, you know? So that really resonated.
To me, that's a huge part of it too, because when someone's done something awful to you, like you just want to blame, well, this, you know, I wouldn't be this way if it wasn't for you, and blame. And a big part of it was taking responsibility for myself, because I did put up with years of stuff I never should have put up with. That was my choice. I cannot blame him for that. And that was really hard. And I didn't want to do that. And having that realization and being honest with myself and understanding where I had enabled, and even with just the small stuff, like I said, waiting to take a hike until he was available.
Yeah.
Stupid stuff like that. Or you know what? Dinner's at 6 p.m. You're either there or you're not there. If you feel like you need to work a million more hours, that's not my problem. That's not the kid's problem. Like, you know when dinner is. If it's important to you, you will be there. But we're not going to keep changing and bending over backwards, which is what I had been doing. And I'm like, I'm responsible for that. And I had to look in the mirror and take responsibility for stuff, man, I did not want to take responsibility for, because I had a really easy target to blame everything about me.
Oh, yeah.
And I couldn't do that. And we would never have been able to be married again if I didn't, because I knew several things. And one of them was I didn't want to continue to bring up his stuff or blame him and sit on my pedestal for the rest of my life. I didn't want to do that. I don't want to be that person. It's not who I am. And I could do it and we'd both be miserable.
That's right.
It's not honoring to him and all the work that he's done. And I just knew I didn't want to live that way. I didn't want to police anybody. I didn't, you know, I really wanted a healthy, mutual respect, loving relationship. And owning my own stuff was the only way that I was going to get there. And then secondly, the second hardest thing was forgiving myself. I had a much easier time forgiving him than forgiving myself.
Really?
I really beat myself up for years for all the things I ignored, for all the things that I enabled, for when I stood up for myself, I'd subsequently back down. Like, I was so ashamed of myself and my own behavior that I remember waking up and I was, I don't know, in my mid 40s. And I thought, man, Suzanne, I liked you a lot better at 22 than I do now. And that should not be the case. And I just was like, I don't like who you are. How did you get here? And so there was a lot for me to kind of go back and figure out how I got there, to make sure that it didn't happen again, not to blame, but to take responsibility and to not repeat my mistakes.
Yeah.
So I had a really, really difficult time forgiving myself and not, and that was another thing. I was like, you know what? I'm not going to spend the rest of my life beating myself up. I made some bad decisions. I did some bad stuff. Clearly, you know, drinking myself to death every night, not a good plan. I'm responsible for that. And I was, well, like I said, when my anger came out sideways, I was very, the way it came out towards him was not okay a lot of times.
Yeah.
I could say he deserved it, but it still wasn't okay. I'm still responsible for that. And so that was a really huge piece of the puzzle for me. And that, and again, growing up in the church and having a relationship with Christ, I thought I understood forgiveness and grace. I knew nothing about either one of those things. Like it just changed everything I knew about those concepts.
Yeah.
And I look now at all the good that's come from it and the level of empathy and compassion that I feel for other people all the time is I'll always be grateful for that. You know, I would never repeat this. I'm not going to be one of those people that's like, yeah, I'm really glad this happened. Okay. I could have learned these lessons another way, you know, like
would rather do it differently.
But we do try to focus on, okay, so what have we learned and who are we now and how can we live in service to other people? And that's what I try to stay focused on now.
Well, I have to ask, because I think forgiving ourselves, I think that can be incredibly difficult.
Mm-hmm.
What did you, like, what steps did you take in order to forgive yourself?
One of the first things I did, Desmond Tutu, Archbishop Desmond Tutu wrote a book on forgiveness with his daughter. I cannot remember her name. I can't remember the name of the book right now, but I know it's a book. And it was profoundly impactful on the concept of forgiveness. I read a lot. I would say the other one that had the biggest impact on my life, I read The Choice by Auschwitz survivor, Dr. Edith Eger. Phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I mean, when people say you can't read this book and not be changed, that is a correct statement. And that really opened me up to, I have a choice. I can choose whatever path I want to take. And I need to choose to forgive myself. And sometimes that's, you know, forgiveness isn't a one-time thing either. And we both had to learn that. And as things would come up, I'd have to kind of like acknowledge it and forgive it. And every once in a while, something pops up for my own self. And I'm like, man, Suzanne, I cannot believe you were that dumb. You know, I'm like, talk about yourself that way. Like you cannot, that is not okay. And so it's still a process. I think it's always going to be a process.
Yeah. It's not a one-time activity. I love that.
No. So understanding that was huge for me as well.
Yeah. So as you think about it, I mean, because it's a powerful story and you've talked about what you've learned. Any advice, what advice would you have for others who are going through a type of reinvention, you know, whatever that might be?
I think being honest is the first thing I'd say. Be honest with yourself, first of all, and have some trusted friends that are good listeners that will affirm you, but also challenge you, give you perspective, help you see things in a different way and not just feed your pain. I didn't want to remain stuck in my pain. I think it's too easy to get addicted to our own emotions. And then you're just trading, you know, I didn't want to trade one addiction for another. I didn't want to become addicted to my trauma and have that define me. Like I was very aware of things like that. Like we can get addicted to anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think having just that honesty piece is huge. And I would find a good therapist, have a trained person who is trained in whatever you're going through to kind of be that voice of reason who has no real emotional tie to any of it, but just to give you perspective, help you work through some things. Yeah. I'd say, don't beat yourself up. Like, you know, don't beat yourself up. You can't go back and change the past. And so you need to just change your mindset about things. Like you do, like I said, that book, The Choice, had such an impact that I'm so aware every day that I always have a choice. And even when negative thoughts creep up or something from the past pops up, I'm like, I know how to just deal with it, to feel it. Like there's no more resentment going on. I'm not stuffing away things anymore or just glossing over them. but I just allow myself to feel it. I know that it's an emotion that's tied to a past event, and I don't need to be ruled by that anymore. And yeah. I just acknowledge it for what it is, and I can move on. And it's amazing how when you kind of train your brain to do that, it gets easier all the time. And I read a quote not too long ago where a guy was talking about, you know, our brains and emotion. And he said, having a memory without the emotion is called wisdom. And I thought, Oh, that really speaks to me because My memories are never going to go away, But I don't have to get mired down in all the negativity of it. I can just know that it's there and know that it exists and have the wisdom to deal with it and move forward.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you're talking about the brain, I discovered a new app. It's called Healthy Minds. And It's based on training your brain. It has a meditation aspect. It also has awareness. It's got all these different things. And the one today was our brain is like, it's always telling us stories, right? The metaphor he used, I thought was awesome. He's like, think about your brain as that hyped up sportscaster who's just going to fill every moment of every episode. And it's telling stories. And sometimes the stories are true, but often they're not. And I love this app. It has just been, because I'm not a big, I'm not great at meditation. I'm trying to get better. It's like, so I need the help, but I love it. I just, and it's great because you can choose how long, like 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15, 20, and you can also be active or you can be, you know, sitting. And I think, oh my gosh, it's just, it's so powerful the way that we train our brains.
Right. It is amazing to me how, you know, they've only discovered in the last 40 years that our brains are so plastic. And we talked about the creating the story. That is something that my husband and I work on a lot because we both created stories for years. And so we now will come to the other person and be like, okay, before I create a story in my head, we're going to talk about this. And it has alleviated so many things because sometimes he'll say that to me and I'm like, oh yeah, that's not even close. That's not even in the ballpark. And it's the same way for both of us. We're, you know, it's amazing. Oh, we're in, you know, we've learned to just lighten up and laugh about things. I don't think I mentioned that we live full-time in an RV right now. So we live in very close quarters. So when I'm in the kitchen cooking, there's not a lot of room. So I was cooking dinner and he asked if he needed any help. And I just said, no, you know, I think I got it. It's pretty quick. No big deal. And then I said, can you just get out? And I kind of motioned towards the door. And I said it just like that. Like, can you just get out? In my head, I said, can you just get out the convection oven? But, you know, words are hard sometimes. So apparently those two words didn't actually come out of my mouth. And he just started laughing so hard. He's looking at me. He's like, you want me to leave? And I was like, wait, what did I say? Did I not say convection oven? And honestly, years ago, Bobby, that would have been a stupid argument. Like that actually would have been an argument. And now we just laugh about it. And even after 30 years of being together, I can't expect the man to read my mind. No. He can't read my mind. Like I actually had to say the words convection oven because it really, and I was laughing about it. I was like, yeah, that was, you're asking for help. You know, if I need help. And I'm like, can you just get out, please? Can you get out? And so just,
can you just take yourself outdoors?
Yeah. So it's really, you know, believing the best about the other person, assuming the best. We're all just trying our best. I don't think my husband ever sets out to purposely be mean to me or say things that would hurt my feelings. Of course not. And same here. So giving people the benefit of the doubt and clarifying things, or even it's okay for him to say something benign that it does hurt my feelings. They're still my feelings. And he's not responsible for them, but I'll be like, you know what? That actually hurt my feelings when you said that. And I just need to acknowledge it. And then you can be like, oh yeah, I'm really sorry. And we just move on. Like it's amazing that communication is just, you know, make it so much harder than it is. It's like the one thing they tell you when you get married and we're all so awful at it.
Yeah.
We're terrible communicators and terrible listeners. And
but it makes a huge difference. And I made a note of that. I love that. You know, before I create a story in my head,
exactly.
We all do it. We see behavior, we create a story around it, and more than half the time, we're probably wrong. I love that.
And it has just, I'm sure we've avoided a lot of conflict because of just from
that one thing. Mm-hmm. Think about if we did that with our coworkers, if with our siblings, with everyone that we're around. Oh my goodness.
Right.
So do you want to share a little bit about what you guys do now?
Oh, sure.
Business. Yeah.
So we've, like I said, a couple years ago, I left my job at the school, and he had left his company that he started and ran for like 12 years. It was part of the undoing and the getting back together kind of thing. And we just decided to work together. And so he started the same thing that he was doing before, but it's just the two of us. And I felt like it would give us an opportunity to spend a lot of time together. It also afforded me the opportunity to, you know, not be at a job from 8 to 5 or whatever that allowed me to do nonprofit work that I'm involved in. Oh. And I used to go to Uganda several times a year. So it was a win for me in that it was part of our new marriage was allowing Suzanne to do things that she was passionate about. Mm-hmm. So that's really what motivated me to leave a job I absolutely loved to work from home. And then our last child graduated from high school last year. And so we'd already been talking for a couple of years about what is that going to look like? Like we don't want to be these, you know, they call the gray hair divorce, empty nester divorce. A lot of people get divorced after the last kid leaves. And we had already been through all that. So we didn't think that was going to be a problem, but we're like, what are we going to do? And we need to acknowledge that our relationship, even where it is now, it's going to change again because we have no children in our home. And that's a huge change. And so we tossed around a million ideas. Well, we ended up, long story short, sold our home. And because I just didn't want to even clean the thing anymore. It was too big. We didn't have enough people to fill it. And ended up buying an RV and living in an RV full time. And so we've been doing that for 6 months and love it. And then through all of this, he had decided to write a book about his experience with, you know, having work-life boundaries and how he had gotten sucked into that corporate persona, big shot guy and have to, you know, hustle and all that kind of stuff. And I actually wrote a chapter in the book, the longest one, obviously, and so published that. And then that kind of led to people reaching out, asking questions, wanting help, like, how did you do this?
Wow.
Which took us down this road of starting to coach people, either mm-hmm. other executives or in talking to their wives and families and that sort of thing. So it's sort of, he talks about follow what's unfolding. So that's what we're trying to do and how we're trying to live and how, which led to this idea of life design. Like mm-hmm. never in a million years did I think I'd be turning 50, living full-time in an RV. And I love it.
Yeah.
And so we are just trying to follow what's unfolding. And we're very passionate about this idea that we don't have to work our whole lives, wait till we retire to do what we want to do. Like figure out a way to come together and figure out what you want to do together and find a way to do those things now. Like we're not retired. Right. We're empty nesters. We live in an RV, but we're not retired. We still work, but we also have certain things that we want to do and we want to travel and we want to spend certain time together. And we have all these boundaries in place and that we adhere to pretty religiously. And so we've been working to help people understand life design, whatever that looks like for you. It doesn't have to look the same as it does for us. If a couple wants to work, both of them decide, yeah, we're working 80 hours a week. This is what we want to do. This is our plan. And if you're both in agreement about that, God bless, go That's ahead right. and do that. I don't get to determine what works for you as long as you are in agreement with your partner and you can figure out a way where both people can have their individuality, but also your relationship together. And yeah. so we've worked really, really hard to do that. And so that's pretty much that's what we're cool. doing. And we have a podcast, we do newsletter, we've got a Facebook group that we've got, you know, some people on that all want the same things. And it's been really fun too. We've met just including you, we've met just really fun, interesting people. Like I don't even care how many people listen to our podcast. Like, we've met just the coolest people. So I've just enjoyed the whole process of it. And we just figure, you know what, if we can't, I can either take both of us, we can take all the stuff that happened and just put it in a vault and pretend it never happened or whatever, or live our happy lives from here on out. Or we can take all of that and use it to help other people. Yeah. And if we can help other people avoid pitfalls that we fell into, and I mean, if we have even helped one person, to me, that has value to that.
That's right.
And so, yeah, we're just trying to live in service to others. That's, you know, I don't know how many years I have left. Something about turning 50 is just awesome. And you kind of go, yeah, let's go. You know, I want to do as much as I possibly can before my time ends here.
Mm-hmm. Leave something behind.
Right.
You know, right. I love that. So what are the best ways for people to find you in, like, the Facebook group, if you wanted to mention that? What's the best way?
It's Life Design Living. And there's like a red and white logo, and I'll send you all the information so you can put it in the show.
Perfect.
And our website is carlasandsuzanne.com, and it's SUSANNE. And let's see what else. I mean, the book is called The Un-American Dream, written by Carlos Hidalgo. Yes. And I think, you know, and we're on Instagram as well. It's also Life Design Living. And so, yeah, we just try to put a lot of content out there, and we listen to a lot of people, and, you know, we're just having fun doing it.
Yeah. And all on an RV right now, which I love.
Right.
That is so cool. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Well, I knew it was going to be a fun conversation. I so appreciate you just being transparent and sharing your story, all in the service of helping others.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, I think that's what it's all about. So thank you.
Right. You know, yeah, that is what it's all about.
Yeah. I hope that you found Suzanne's transparency and her desire to help others to be compelling. I know that I did. So here are my three insights for thriving. One, I loved it when Suzanne talked about taking responsibility for her own stuff versus blaming others, which would have been pretty easy for her to do. And I think that is so powerful. It's probably also why one of the things that has set her free to move forward and to enjoy her life instead of being mired in the emotions, you know, that could kind of be ruling her life if she had allowed it. Two, I think that we all have an inner voice that is speaking to us all the time. Sometimes we don't hear that voice for a multitude of reasons. Maybe we're too busy. Maybe, you know, we don't have enough margin, whatever that might be. And sometimes I think that we hear the voice and we choose to ignore it. And tuning into and honoring that voice is one of the most important things that we can do. I know for me, some of the biggest mistakes that I've ever made have come when I ignored that voice. And finally, number three, before making assumptions about someone else's behavior or their intention, go to them and say, hey, before I create a story in my head, and then ask for clarification, think about how many conflicts and how many hurt feelings we could avoid by doing that one simple thing. I also hope that you're going to check out what Suzanne and Carlos are doing over on Facebook with their group, as well as checking out their book. And all those links are in the show notes. On a separate note, we are busy building a course ready to be released late spring of 2021. It's called Start Your Future Today. And we're excited to offer it because it brings together our experience over the last 20 plus years in creating the life that we love to live every day. And I think that there are three important things to remember here, what I call three fundamental truths. One, the future can be changed. Two, you can change your future. And three, you don't have to wait. I firmly believe that we can write our own story. And the important thing here is that the pen is already in your hand. You just have to do it. So if you've ever found yourself saying, I feel stuck or trapped, I don't know how to move forward, or I know what I want to do, but I don't know if it's possible. Or, you know, things are pretty good, but is there something more? Then this course is for you. In it, we're going to cover things like how to describe the future that you want that is inspiring and motivating to you. It's your future. It should be motivating to you. Another thing that we'll cover is how to start moving towards that exciting future. And then finally, if you like, you can submit your story to me after you complete it. and you can get feedback and ideas for potential next steps. But the goal of the whole course is to help you begin writing your story today. And for a limited time, we're giving away scholarships for the course. Here's how you can enter to win a scholarship. 4 simple steps. Number 1, subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. 2, leave a review of the podcast. 3, take a screenshot of your review. And finally, number 4, email your screenshot to hello@unyielded.net with the subject Start Program. And we'll be selecting 5 winners over the next month to receive a scholarship for that program, for that course. Just wanted to say a special thank you. I just wanted to say thanks for tuning in, for listening and supporting the podcast. My true hope is that you're finding value and that you're finding insights that will help you thrive. Because at the end of the day, this podcast is about providing hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all be more fulfilled and successful if we choose.